Pylos. The next morning, Eurycleia let out a gasp of astonishment when she came in with his bowl of honey and curdled milk.
"Why, Telemachus, what happened to you? Did a goddess ravish you in the night?"
Inspecting himself in the polished plaque on the wall, Telemachus wondered too. He looked, he could not describe it. His eyes shone. His skin was clear. There was something new in him, an air, a bearing. He fixed his sword to his belt. Was he taller? That was impossible. He had dreamed that night of a pair of very grey eyes, and inside the dream he had been sure that Mentes was really a god in disguise. Not any god, but his father's guardian, great Olympian Athena. The suitors were shocked when he summoned them together, but the new authority in which Athena had dressed him, if it really was she, gave him courage. Antinous, at first contemptuous, then agreeable, then slyly silent, consented to wait until Telemachus had returned from his journey before pressing Penelope for a decision. Next, he went to Mentor, who saw at once what needed to be done. Telemachus didn't quite understand how it could be so, but Mentor reported back that a ship and 20 loyal crew would be ready by nightfall. Parting from his mother was more painful, however. In all his life, he had never left Ithaca. She took his hands in hers. "If you put yourself in danger, think of it not as courage, but a dagger in my heart. You have a duty not to let me die of sorrow. You understand that?"
"I understand. But my journey will bring joy. It will bring news of father. Mentor says the gods are with us."
And now Ithaca was far behind them, and Mentor and he were leaning over the side of their ship and watching an indistinct blur on the horizon resolve itself into the grand stone-built port of Pylos. Sandy Pylos, as Homer likes to call it, was a very prosperous kingdom in the southwest corner of the Peloponnese, bordering Sparta.
"Will we really meet Nestor?"
Mentor smiled. "Of course. That is his palace there, looking down over the harbour."
"But what will I say to him?"
"The gods will give you all the eloquence you need. The words will come out in the right order. Nestor will welcome us with the grace and warmth for which he is renowned. And look, news of the arrival of two strangers has already reached his palace." As they made harbour, two young men, one of Telemachus's age, the other bearded and more muscled, came running towards them. They stopped in front of Telemachus and Mentor, panting and smiling.
"The watchtower told us that a ship had docked," said the younger.
"Ithacan colours, too," said the older.
"You're very welcome to Pylos. Come with us, do."
The king himself was there to greet them. Telemachus had never seen a man of such great age. The lines were carved deep around his eyes and mouth, but the eyes that shone out of that creased face were as lively and bright as those of his sons, the two boys who had led them to the palace. He held his back as straight as a spear and walked without a staff to support him. So this was the legendary Nestor. Nestor the Wise, chief advisor to Agamemnon throughout the 10-year siege of Troy. For all his years, he had, they say, ridden his chariot into battle with the other great warrior heroes and lost his beloved son Antilochus in the bloody carnage of that terrible war. But his fame as a hero had been assured long before that. He had participated in the great Caledonian boar hunt a generation earlier. That must mean, thought Telemachus dizzily, that he had known Atalanta and Meleager,
Jason had taken part in that hunt too. Jason! Iolaus as well, the nephew of Heracles. Theseus had been amongst them. Theseus and Pirithous. Telamon, father of Ajax. Peleus, father of Achilles. Nestor had known them all.
The Caledonian boar hunt was one of the greatest gatherings of Greek heroes prior to the Trojan War. The tale of how they pursued their pitiless porcine foe is recounted in Heroes. The last survivor of the Age of Heroes was bidding them dispose themselves on cushions and calling for roast meat and honeyed wine for their bellies and oil for their feet.
"I hope I'm polite enough to refrain from bothering my guests with questions before they have quite sated their hunger and thirst," he said. "There will be time enough for conversation."
"I don't think this one will ever stop eating," said the younger of the two youths, watching Telemachus with big, astonished eyes. Telemachus put down his plate with a guilty clatter. The elder youth nudged him. "Don't take any notice of Pisistratus," he said. "Eat as much as you like."
My apologies," said Telemachus. I had not known I was so hungry. I found it hard to eat on the ship. I'm not used to sea journeys. There was a Meltemi, you see, and..."
Pisistratus poked out his tongue and made a puking noise. Nestor stabbed a finger at him.
"Silence, wretched child!"
But there was no anger in his tone. The Meltemi is the notorious hot, dry west wind that causes many an attack of seasickness in ferry passengers journeying amongst the Greek islands in the summertime, as this traveller can testify.
"I am Nestor. The sensible one is my son Thrasymedes, and this insolent puppy is Pisistratus, whom the god sent me some 20 years ago as a punishment for some dreadful crime that I must have committed without knowing. Doubtless they will disclose the nature of the offence in their own time. Meanwhile, I suffer."
Pisistratus rocked back, howling with laughter.
"Oh, I am a torment," he said, "a sore trial and torment to your white hairs, a tribulation I am."
Telemachus had never seen affection and laughter like this between anyone, let alone the king and princes of a great royal house. He and Mentor sometimes joked about things. Eumaeus was good at telling stories. He could laugh along with the old servant Eurycleia. His mother was deeply fond of him, of course, but this teasing and tickling and, what was the word? This silliness, this happy silliness, was something quite new to him. So this is how fathers and sons were together. Telemachus smiled, but there was an ache in his heart. Mentor looked towards him, signalling with a nod of his head that it was his turn to speak. But was Telemachus going mad? How had he never noticed before that Mentor's eyes were grey? As grey as those of his visitor last week, Mentes of Taphos. It couldn't be. Surely Mentor's eyes were brown, like everyone else's. Perhaps they were related. Grey eyes were not so common. Mentes, Mentor. But this confused silence was becoming rude.
"And forgive me, Majesty."
Somehow the words came out in the right order, just as Mentor had said they would. "The wine, the warmth of the midday sun, yes, but chiefly the warmth of your hospitality and of the welcome shown by your noble sons, it has robbed me of speech. We should introduce ourselves. We come from Ithaca. This is my friend and tutor, Mentor. My name is Telemachus." The boys froze still, and Nestor stared in amazement. For a moment, nothing was said. Then a smile spread across Nestor's face, stretching the wrinkles into infant smoothness.
"My dear boy," he cried, "can it really be Odysseus's son?"
"I see it," said Thrasymedes, with wonder in his voice. "I see it in his eyes, father."
He grasped Telemachus by the arm. "I had the honour to fight alongside him. It is for news of him that we have sailed here to Pylos," said Telemachus. "Your wisdom and knowledge are known throughout the world, King Nestor. If anyone knows what has befallen him, it will be you." But Nestor knew nothing. It was he who wanted information. How was Penelope? Was it true that suitors from all over the place were circling like vultures? Telemachus answered, hiding his despondency at the king's lack of news as best he could. Nestor sensed his disappointment and croaked with sorrow.
"It grieves me that I cannot help. You see, I was amongst the first to sail from Troy once the city fell, before Athena sent the storms and Poseidon shook the fleets. I was back here in Pylos in less than a week."
A thought appeared to strike him.
"I tell you who you should visit. Yes, of course, you must go to Menelaus and Helen. Sparta is not so far from here. 2 days' ride at most. One, if you could manage without sleep. Pisistratus will accompany you both. Oh, where did your friend Mentor go?"
They looked about them. Where was Mentor? None of them had seen him leave. A screech high overhead made them look up into the great open square of skylight above. A huge golden eagle was soaring and circling in the cloudless blue.
"The gods are with you," said Thrasymedes.